This episode is sponsored by the Syracuse University School of Education. A pioneer in inclusive education, Syracuse offers scholarships for graduate programs in teacher preparation, counseling, higher education, educational leadership, instructional design, and more. Syracuse's equity-driven community leads in inclusive and anti-racist research and practice, as well as experimental learning and the integration of digital technologies. Advance the future of learning and your career. Visit soe.syr.edu/pulse to learn more. That's soesyredu/pulse.
You're now locked in to HBCU Pulse. We are the number one outlet for HBCU life, talking about everything that's important to our culture, from on-campus issues to politics and what's trending on the yard. We always keep that same energy. Don't touch that dial. You're listening to HBCU Pulse Radio.
What's going on, everybody? This is Randall Barnes, the founder of HBCU Pulse and host HBCU Pulse Radio in the building for another special edition of the show on today, where we're talking about week 8 of HBCU football, the week 7 that was. A lot of amazing things going on. I just want to say it is Fort Valley's homecoming week. So listen, what happened on Thursday, we're not going to worry about it, okay? Because Benedict is amazing. They're a historically great team. And we'll see him again in the championship, hopefully. But how you doing today, Aria? Everything all good?
Everything's really, really good. I also want to throw out there, it's also CAU's homecoming week. Both of my sisters are alum. But I'm loving that it's just homecoming week. You know, a lot of parties to go to, a lot of football to see. That's amazing to me. But I've been good.
We're going to talk about my game of the week. It wasn't amazing. But we're going to go on and start with your game of the week, Tennessee Tech versus South Carolina State University. This is actually South Carolina State's last game before they enter conference play in the MEAC. So tell us about how South Carolina State was looking, if you think they're ready for the smoke.
Honestly, when you look at South Carolina State and the competition that they have been playing, you can see that there is a lack of dominance in the defense. The offense is really confused on what to do. We've been saying this all season. Buddy Pough doesn't really have his offensive weapons between wideouts or running backs in any group that he can choose from. He does have some decent tight ends, which do calculate, besides the running back, some of the yards down the field. But when it comes to their quarterback and just the overall system of how South Carolina State is playing, and you look at them and the opponents that they have been up against, it's like, are they even ready for the first challenge going into week 8? And like you said, it will be in conference play. The rest of these games will determine whether they make it to the Celebration Bowl. And right now, just from looking at Morgan State overachieving out of conference games, and you look at Howard and how they kind of established yourself, honestly, it's anybody's game. If South Carolina State does play North Carolina Central on week 9, and they have been the most recent upset that North Carolina Central has faced, and sometimes the turning point of whether or not they can go in it. But back to the game, it was amazing. First, because South Carolina State scored first, being 7-0 in the first quarter. Then after that, Tennessee Tech, they literally ran with it. They ran the ball, they threw the ball, almost intercepted the ball a couple of times. And like I was telling you, if you just gave up on the game and the score, the final score ended up being 28-7 after a 1-yard warning and another 4-yard run, back-to-back scores leading into the fourth quarter. Then all you had to look at is Buddy Pough's face and just his reactions. Let me tell you, Randall, it's pain. It's pain that Buddy Pough feels. If you're wondering why he may be retiring, it is because of the pain on his face and he is tired of the embarrassment. Like we say, he has an amazing career. He has a lot of amazing conference plays, a lot of amazing championship plays. Buddy Pough overall is an amazing coach, a future Hall of Famer coach for HBCUs, and we love that. But this game just didn't display the excellence that he has carried for generations over generations. And I think it's a little scary to see that South Carolina State is 2-4 and that Corey Fields Jr. is still averaging these interceptions and is still having these half games. He's literally 50% into all the games that he's going in. In this game, he was 17 out of 34, 224 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 interception. And when you look at those stats and you see that your quarterback is 50-50, either he's going to have a good game or he's going to have a bad game, it doesn't look great going into these conference plays that we have going to these next couple weeks. That's all the MEAC is going to give you. So in this instance, it wasn't a great game. Only totaling 274 yards in this game, one turnover, only 10 first downs, which we know is crucial playing these next couple games, especially against Morgan State, especially against Howard, especially when you go up against Central. South Carolina State is going to have to try to improve these stats, but also get better when they get into this conference play. Tennessee Tech was not a good game that you could kind of determine who they are in neither of these games, honestly, that they have played before. Could tell you, hey, South Carolina State is a team to beat, but maybe they have a chance to turn around. Just specifically in this game, this 21-point deficit was not something to look at to be like, maybe they are prepared.
So I think when it comes to South Carolina State, I want to just bring this up and then we'll move on, is that there have been a lot of legendary coaches in HBCU football that we've seen. And of course, we've been able to see Buddy Pough and his run with South Carolina State. But seeing Buddy Pough struggle is sad. Seeing his team struggle is very sad because we want him to go out on top. We want to see North Carolina Central in, you know, the Celebration Bowl because we want to see the best matchup. But we want to see him at the very least contend. We want to see like a Kobe, you know, send off Mamba out type of moment when it comes to Buddy Pough. But I want to say that this situation sounds a little bit like what happened to legendary greatest of all time, Grambling coach Eddie G. Robinson. 1941 to 1997, he served as coach of Grambling. He had a little bit of a layoff during the war because his players got drafted until the war in the 1940s, but he came back and he put together a lot of great seasons for a lot of folks in the NFL. REO, he had a 3-8 season in 1997. So Eddie G. Robinson, the great Eddie G. Robinson, had a losing season. He didn't go off with the glory of Eddie G. Robinson wins again. He sees the championship. This wasn't a Tom Brady-like story for Eddie G. Robinson, but he's still amazing. He's still a legend. I think that we're going to see history repeating itself. I'm not saying that South Carolina State is going to go 3-8, but I don't think they're going to finish this year with a winning record. I think Howard's really good. We'll talk about him in a second. I think North Carolina Central is contending. I don't think they're going to have a winning record. And we're going to see the exact same thing that we saw with Eddie G. Robinson, where it's going to be a losing season, but we don't care about that. It's Buddy Pough. He's a legend. The dean of HBCU coaching. So it's all good. Enjoy retirement. We love you. All right? But we're going to move on and get our Doug Williams, which will. There's a lot of speculation on who Buddy Pugh's Doug Williams will be. There's a lot of speculation. But we're going to leave that there. And we're going to see who's the success, like our Doug Williams was, Eddie G. Robinson. We're going to see who Buddy Pugh's successor is. But I think that we can't grade him too harshly because, I mean, listen, he's about to retire. We've seen other great coaches. They had some down seasons at the tail end of their coaching careers. So I think we just need to celebrate the amazingness that he's done and what he's done to just send so many amazing pros into the NFL. And I think that that should be his legacy and not really what we've been seeing because I just don't think in MEAC play he'll fare well. So, Aria, my game of the week was Alabama State versus Jackson State. I got this pick totally wrong. I thought Jackson State would win. They didn't. Alabama State won 24-19. And Alabama State crashed Jackson State's homecoming just like Eddie Robinson Jr. said he would. He said, Deion Sanders, don't go to Power 5. I want it next year. Schedule us for your homecoming. We know Deion Sanders left because they lost to Stanford on Friday. However, Jackson State was there. TC Taylor coached. I've been very high on them. I think they are a good team. There's issues that they have to address, but I think they're a good team, and they're doing ridiculously well after the success that they had under Deion Sanders. But this just simply was not their afternoon in their homecoming game versus Alabama State. When you look at the stats, we talk about box score watchers often in sports, REO. Folks that don't watch the game, they have so much to say, but they're just looking at the stats. But I'll tell you what, if you look at the stats, you would think Jackson State won. How did Jackson State lose this game, REO? Jackson State had more rushing yards, 182 rushing yards. They had more passing yards, 228. And they finished the game with a higher total yardage, 410 total yards. Alabama State only had 91 passing yards, and they played two quarterbacks. Now, granted, Damon Stewart was 5 of 12, 80 yards, one rushing touchdown. But Nyquil Lett, 2 of 3, 11 yards, one passing touchdown. So they played almost one and a half quarterback. It wasn't really two. But still, you play two people at the quarterback position and you only get 91 passing yards. But Alabama State won this game. So the real question is how, for the folks that didn't log on to ESPN Plus and watch it. Well, it goes down to this. The basics of sports, Ariel, is you got to score more points than the other team. And that is what Alabama State did. The analytics, the drive charts, the box score, it doesn't indicate the fact that Alabama State just scored more points than Jackson State. They got in the end zone more. Jackson State moved the ball down the field. They had an opportunity to win, but Alabama State just was able to get more points. So Alabama State struck first with a 10-yard Nyquilett touchdown pass to A.J. Gates and then a field goal that put them up 10-0 within that first quarter. But then Jackson State scored 10 points off of a Jacoby Morgan 2-yard touchdown run and a field goal of their own. So it was 10-10. It was tied 10-10 when the second quarter. Third quarter, only 3 points were scored by either team. And that was off of a 45-yard field goal by Jackson State kicker Dylan Watson, who's actually been injured. So Jackson State then goes up 13-10 with 2 minutes and 21 seconds left in the third. So if I stop there, you'll think, okay, so they have more rushing yardage, more passing yardage, more total yardage. Then you kick a field goal, you're up 13-10. How did you lose? How they lost was this. It was an evenly matched game for the most part. Alabama State scored first, and then Jackson State scored. They take the lead off the field goal. But then in the fourth quarter, Damon Stewart rips off a 12-yard touchdown run to start the fourth, and Marvin Harris II followed up with a 2-yard rush a few minutes later. That puts them up 24-13. So now it's like, okay, what's going on here? Jackson State needs to respond. So Jackson State eventually got back on the scoreboard with a 2-yard Desmond Moultrie run that made the game 24-19. It was about a good 3 minutes left in the game. Alabama State gets the ball back. They're trying to run it. They're trying to run the clock out. And that just simply did not work. They were forced to punt. Jackson State did what they needed to do. 2 minutes left in the game. Jason Brown has the ball back. Of course, he's a starting quarterback. We raved about him at that South Carolina State, Jackson State, MEAC/SWAC Challenge. He set records. So it's like, Jason Brown, this is what legends are made of. Salvage your homecoming. We just saw Edward Waters. They just had a miraculous win over Tuskegee on a Hail Mary. It is your turn, my brother. Do that. Make that happen. And he honestly couldn't, because he had the opportunity, Ariel. Jason Brown had a chance to throw a game-winning touchdown pass from Alabama State's 25-yard line with 3 seconds left on the game. And he literally overthrew his receiver and almost threw an interception. It literally bounced off the hands of the Alabama State receiver. So it was an interesting game, probably the most interesting football game I've ever seen in my life. I don't know if I ever want to see a football game like that again. It was mildly frustrating because I was expecting so much more.
And you know, that was one of the things that I was looking at this game. First of all, like you said, it's incredible that even Alabama State went on a 10-0 run going into the first quarter. Like, what? Alabama State up 10 by Jackson State scoring no points. That's ridiculous, because that wasn't how the game went last year. But we're starting to see that maybe Jackson State does have a little bit of a kryptonite, and the kryptonite begins with Alabama State. Like, whenever they play them, it's a breakdown in skill, it's a breakdown in their defense, it's a breakdown in their offense especially. And I think it's just the underlying beef that they have with each other, but also just the up in competition that Alabama State has. I don't think Jackson State has went down in talent in certain aspects per se. They definitely haven't gone down in coaching. They're still a really good team, but this is the first time in the 2 years post Deion Sanders tenure that we see Alabama State beat Jackson State, not in dominating fashion, but in a close game that was absolutely winnable by Jackson State. And what I say by they don't have necessarily the skill set or the team that they used to have, it's more so on the defense. And it was weird to see that Jackson State could not stop the run by Alabama State. And that was the main point of attack that Alabama State took, was to keep it on the ground and keep it moving, because they know Jackson State's defense, they're really big, but they're really tall this year. Anything that you try to throw may be picked, it may be tipped. They love to play man coverage. So everybody is covered. So putting that ball on the ground for Alabama State was probably the best point of attack that they could have done. And it actually worked, which was really, really weird. And the reason why I think it worked, because I don't think they have as much of big guys, but also skill guys on their defense anymore. You look at these two past years running on Jackson State's defensive line. Of course, you're missing Travis Hunter. You're missing Isaiah Bolden. You're missing Tavion Beasley. You're missing Marquise Johnson. You're missing Antonio Doyle. You're missing Charlton Goodell. You're missing Trayvon Riggs. All these players, you're missing Zion Walker. You're missing Julius Reynolds. You're missing Jelani Davis, Devontae Davis. You don't have any of these people from the past 2 years. You only have a certain few. And when you look at these guys are plus 200 pounds, pushing 300, pushing that weight, dominating. They used to do quarterback rushes all the time, quarterback hurries all the time. They used to block picks all the time. Their defense was incredible for the past 2 years. You don't have these players anymore. Some of them went to Deion Sanders. Some of them went drafted. You don't have Shiloh Sanders anymore, who contributed to some of those picks. So when you look at this game, of course, yeah, it was winnable. And, you know, it was pretty sloppy. But Alabama State is really nothing compared to Jackson State and the weapons and the type of performance that they put on each week. So I feel like this was just an upset to me of what Jackson State could really be like. Because now you have FAMU at the number one spot in the SWAT East. And Jackson State has just now dropped to number three. They're actually tied with Alabama State. If Alabama State wins their next game or Jackson State loses its next game, they could go into fourth place and risk not even competing at the end of this season, which will be really, really weird compared to how great they have been doing, like I said, post Deion Sanders. So this drop and looking, and you also have to look at their quarterback. When you look at it now with Shador Sanders, there was over a 60% completion rate in the red zone. Right now, Jackson State looks at 52% and lowering. That is not good. And you're hitting Falcons territory. You're hitting Ritter territory right now. But let me tell you, that kicker for Jackson State, Alabama State, Washington would have loved to have him. All those top 25 schools would have loved to have him yesterday because it all came down to field goals, plus field goals to the 40-yard line. But that's when you get a quarterback, when you get an offense that's 52% from the red zone this season, but also you don't have those big names on your defense, you see these teams like Alabama State and maybe teams that are to come that can be Jackson State, and that's scary. You can't drop anymore if you want to try to redeem yourself. I hope they come back up to number two, but those, to me, look like their main problems. And this was, of course, like you said, somewhat of a disappointing game. Like, the stats don't lie in this sense of the game, but the stats do tell a story when it comes to how they can break into the red zone, what their team is looking like now. Jackson State has some stuff to figure out before the end of this season.
All right, Ario, so let's talk about our headlines of the weekend. So I got to start off, because this technically has to do with football, but it doesn't. It deals more with attendance. So Norfolk went to Tennessee State for their homecoming, and Tennessee State is having a really great season, just like we wanted. And they beat Norfolk 24-17. So typically that's a cause for celebration. Tennessee State, they had so many amazing seasons. Ed Too Tall Jones, number one draft pick from back in the day, John Merritt, all the great history of football for Tennessee State. It seems like they're having another historic run under a former Heisman Trophy winner in Eddie George. That's so pivotal to Tennessee. But Eddie George was not satisfied after the win, and he primarily was not satisfied with the fact that the fans didn't stay after the halftime performance between the Aristocrata bands and the Spartan Legion, two of the best bands in HBCU football. Eddie George was not pleased with the fans' attendance after the halftime.
It was great. Would have loved for it to have been packed, you know, for the entire meeting, not after halftime when the bands left. But, you know, we've got a group, a special group, and I think, you know, I want our fan base to really embrace that. I don't know if they really love football. I just don't know. I mean, I've been here for 3 years, and it's only been a couple games they come to, that many people and be excited. But I don't know if they truly love the game.
I don't know if they truly love football. I don't know if they truly love the game. Those are some telling words. And it made me think, I'm like, wow, like, is that true? Is it a lack of attendance in this Eddie George tenure? Because he came in 2021. So I did some investigative research a little bit. So in 2022, Tennessee State had a 9,811 average attendance number for the season per Hero Sports. I looked at an article from the Tennessean, which is the local news website for Tennessee in Nashville. So the article was called, REO, How Tennessee State Football Moved to Second in FCS Attendance Behind Jackson State. So this is literally quotes from the article. TSU, which averaged 2,467 fans after two home games in 2021, is averaging 16,892 this season, talking about 2022. The Tigers have a near-capacity crowd of 11,553 at Hale Stadium for their home opener on October the 1st against Lane College. This is from last year. And then 22,231 at Nissan Stadium for homecoming against Bethune-Cookman last week. Once again, from 2022. And then this is one of the other quotes that popped out to Ariel. They are ranked second in the FCS in overall average attendance at 28,378. So I'm not going to sit here and say that Eddie George is telling a fabrication, because I think that there's a lot of truth to that, because we've seen at halftime, the fans will foul out. They'll go to the tailgate. They'll go to see the old folks they ain't seen the past 5, 10, 15, 20 years. They got to get them some fish and some ribs, go buy them some merchandise from the vendors. So they will leave. I witnessed that. I know you have as well. But the attendance seems to be pretty good. And I think there is a fervor around that program in support of Eddie George. But I wanted to toss this to you, Ariel, because, of course, I went to Fort Valley State University, an amazing HBCU, but we're not bringing in crowds to 9,000. A&T, especially for y'all's homecoming, y'all make it happen. Y'all bring the whole entire Black America to A&T for y'all's homecoming. So I want to toss to you to see how you feel about this as someone who has an HBCU that's in the top 10, 20 of attendance regularly for the FCS. So what did you think about what Eddie George said and also the attendance numbers that I just read?
Well, Eddie George, welcome to HBCU football. You got to think about how he's been since he got there 3 years ago. And we can start with 2021. You were 5-6 overall. And then you go into 2022. And then it's like, now, okay, you're 4-7. And now you're finally going into 2023 and you're 4-2 with playoff hopes. So it's like the past two seasons with you, Eddie George, haven't been the most amazing. Like, you've had some good games, some really great games, but this is the first season that Tennessee State University is like, hey, we have a good team. There's something to be excited for. We're getting really good traction. What you've been promoting off the field and making sure that we have these kinds of deals and promotion, it's finally happening on the field, and our players, that they are finally seeing the worth in themselves and they're seeing the worth in this team and starting to excel. I think it's somewhat of a transition for the fans in a sense to be like, oh, we have a winning team, let's support them. HBCUs come with a lot of tradition, and I can tell you firsthand, I'm not always sending in the games for homecoming when it comes to A&T. A&T probably has like thousands of students in the stadium, but you also have more thousands of students that are outside the stadium with tailgates and cooking. Like, going to a HBCU is literally like going to a humongous block party cookout with family and friends. You're not going to want to stay in one place. And homecoming, you have alum, you have students, you have potential prospects, you got donors. Everybody's everywhere. It's homecoming. When you're competing with that, there's going to be a lot of in and out as well. And I think that's just something that Eddie George just has to get used to. But you have to give them a reason to stay. And if we really bring down this Tennessee State game that they were playing against Norfolk, it was terrible. It was absolutely terrible to watch. You almost blew a lead going into the half. Like, you were leading. You were up 17-0. At the end of the first quarter, that to me, I would say it would be exciting. And then you let Norfolk score going into the half 6-17. Your team basically fumbled in the fourth quarter, and you expect the audience to watch that after you already up 17-0. Nobody wants to watch that, Eddie George. Nobody wants to watch a team that's supposed to be dominating, that is finally good now, that finally has that self-motivation and confidence, but you almost let this team beat you. And Norfolk State, they're a competing team. They're not really the best team. I think Tennessee State has a better team than Norfolk. When you let a team come back like that, that doesn't warrant me to stay in the stadium. So I think he has to put in the aspects into what he's dealing with here. You got to put into aspect with the environment that you're in, type of culture that you have, the winning culture that you have. Tennessee State is just now starting to build a winning culture. But you got to be respectful of the fans. The fans have to learn how to support you. The fans have to learn how to realize that Tennessee State is no longer a team that is a disappointment, in a sense, for a lack of better words. They're actually really, really great. You want the fans to support. You deserve that support. It's warranted in this season that you deserve this support, but you have to give them something to support. That finish to that game was not something I would love to watch. And as a new fan, I have to kind of redirect my brain like, oh, we're a winning team now. I got to go support them. I got to, you know, give them hype. It takes people a minute, but you can't expect people to come watch you almost lose. That's kind of wild, Eddie George.
What I'll say is this. So, in 2021, after the pandemic, I was the fan that Eddie George wants from Tennessee State. I was that fan because I stayed and watched Fort Valley dominate Clark Atlanta. Like, I stayed and watched the whole entire time. I got up with my brother to get Chick-fil-A. I saw a couple of folks I knew, but I went back and I sat down in the stands in the heat and watched Fort Valley beat Clark Atlanta. That is not the most ideal experience. This is homecoming. Homecoming means that all the alumni are coming back home. Like, that's what homecoming means. So I understand what he's saying, and it did turn to a good game, but I just don't think, and he's not from HBCU culture. He's been around long enough to sort of see what's up, but this is the first season that they're really winning for real. Because of course, 2021, they weren't winning. 2022, they weren't winning. They're 4-2 this year. And if you want to take away what things were as far as with that Notre Dame game, like, they're really about 4-1. So like you said, they have to really learn how to have a winning team because they haven't had it in such a long time since 2017. That last winning season was 6-5. The year before that, 2016, they were 7-4. So we have a whole new generation of Tennessee State students that are still learning what a winning Tennessee State program looks like. And then alumni that are like, I'm gonna go anyway. And that's just the natural inclination of them. But Ariel, that was one of my headlines. So let's talk about MEAC play, because you wanna get into the MEAC championship race. So we're gonna tag team with this headline. So let's talk about the MEAC.
In it, week 8. Week 9, actually going all the way past that, going deep, 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 week 12, week 13, the MEAC is starting to go at it. And I'm so excited because this goes into the plays of, hey, maybe South Carolina State can come back on top. Could Howard take number one? Can Central be running it back? We all expect Central to run it back. But this is the week that everybody can hold redemption. And when we start in week 8, we got Central against Morgan State, which I think is going to be a good game. Norfolk State coming off of a winnable game. South Carolina gets their first test and possibly their first win against Delaware State, who they are going to play in week 8, which this is where all the redemption starts. I believe Central is going to be Morgan State. Howard is going to be Norfolk State, and then South Carolina is going to be Delaware State. So you already have 3 teams in the MEAC that are going to start 1-0 in their conference play. But I love this time in the MEAC, but it's also like, which team wants it more? And I can't wait to see. Honestly, I think Central is going to stay at number 1, but I can't wait to see if South Carolina State makes a climb or if Howard makes a climb. What do you think, Randall? Because this has me excited, but also has me nervous about what the rest of Buddy Pough's season is going to look like, but also what the rankings are going to look like once we get out of this conference play.
One thing for me in this tag team, you just tagged me in. I want to talk about Howard and Eden James because you've been going crazy about Howard and their chances. You had a couple of really good Howard games of the week, Howard versus Hampton a few weeks ago. So I want to spotlight Eden James. So this week is Howard's homecoming. It's also Fort Valley's homecoming as well. But it's Howard University's homecoming on this week. And despite the record and their loss to Harvard, that was really bad, they've had an amazing season. And I think they're riding high heading into MEAC play. So for me, I want to spotlight Eden James. Like, he's a player making it happen. He's someone that I think is going to be very pivotal to this MEAC race. So Eden is the son of Edgerrin James. So y'all know Edgerrin James because Edgerrin James is a 2020 Pro Football Hall of Famer, Indianapolis Colts legend. He's a former standout running back for the University of Miami. He played from 1996 to 1998. I know I wasn't born, Ariel wasn't born. He was making it happen, running touchdowns, was a dominant running back for the Hurricanes before we were even thought about. And it led into being drafted fourth overall by the Colts in the NFL draft in 1998. He had an amazing career, 11-year career, racked up 12,246 rushing yards and 80 rushing touchdowns. So you have Eden James, who's playing the position of his father. That's some shoes to fill. So you would think it'd be sort of hard for him to live up to the hype of his dad as a Pro Football Hall of Famer. But you got to look at it like this. Eden is playing ball, and he chose Howard University because he wanted to go against the grain. His sister, Equisha, is a Howard University alum. And he said this when he committed to Howard University on his Instagram. They show nothing but consistent interest. Everybody assumed I would go to one of these big schools, but I just thought the HBCU route would be something different, especially since it's becoming a trend now. Hopefully, I'm able to be one of those key contributing pieces to show that you don't have to go to a big-time school to make it to the league, if that's what's in the books for me. And Ariel, I think, is in the books for him because he has been a star at Howard. 2022, 406 yards on 75 carries, 2 touchdowns in 12 games. All MEAC third team selection. Rushed for 114 yards against Norfolk last year. His best performance of the season. But you look at 2023, 360 yards on 55 carries, 1 touchdown in the 4 games he's played. He missed week 2 and week 3 against Morrison Hampton with an injury. He came back versus Robert Morris. But you got to look at his games against FBS teams versus Eastern Michigan. 96 yards on 9 attempts. Had a huge 55-yard run in the first half of the game. He left in the third quarter. I think if he stays in, they beat Eastern Michigan, probably beat them 26-29-3 because they could not stop that running attack. Howard had more total offensive yards than Eastern Michigan. Then you go against Northwestern, another FBS team. It looked a little bit dismal. That was your game of the week. He rushed for 177 yards on 21 attempts, including a 64-yard run against Northwestern. Eden is a playmaker. He makes it happen. So I think as we go into this MEAC play, we're talking about North Carolina Central. We're talking about seeing if South Carolina State is going to work out. We're talking about Morgan State and how they have an amazing defense and how they play you great for three quarters. And they might could put up a three-quarter type of situation that could push some teams out the way and make it really tough in conference play. But Ariel, you have been right consistently about Howard. They have even more amazing players on that team, but I think Eden James really stands out because he's leading the team in rushing. So I think that Eden in his sophomore season is going to be a really big piece of a possible Howard University Celebration Bowl run. Now we're going to see. They got to get past North Carolina Central, and Eden was on that team when North Carolina Central beat him down. However, what I'm saying is that he really could be a huge contributor. I'm not going to lie. That'd be a real good storyline going into the Celebration Bowl in Atlanta. Edgerrin James' son in the Celebration Bowl. I'm just saying. It's a lot of great football. We're getting to the end of the season, Ariel. So listen, we're going to be locked in. Where can we find you on social media?
You can find me on Instagram at _dot_martyrdayari or put me in the hot seat on Twitter at @askriri_. Or you can find me on my website at theunaxedopinion.weebly.com.
Like what you hear?
Yeah.
Subscribe to HBCU Pulse Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, head to HBCUPulse.com to stay up to date on what's going on in the HBCU community. Thank you for listening to HBCU Pulse Radio.